part of the Weft family. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Mike Workman and Zelig Bartel. Mike is a person who will share his experience with mental illness, along with Zelig Bartel, who was a member of the local Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. But first, disability news for the week of January 20th, 2025. Earlier this month, President Joe Biden signed the Think Differently Database Act. The new law mandates that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services create a clearinghouse of federal and state resources and information for people with disabilities, their families, and caregivers. The website must include information about long-term support services available through Medicaid and about health care, mental health care, and other topics. The law will be searchable by zip code. The website will be searchable by zip code, according to the lawmakers who led the measure. Former Representative Mark Molinaro of New York said when he introduced the measure in 2023, quote, "Currently, many individuals with disabilities, families, and caregivers don't know what services are available to them. My bipartisan bill helps solve this by creating a first-of-its-kind national website with federal and state resources for individuals with disabilities. The site will be a one-stop shop for locating resources that support and empower individuals with disabilities. This measure represents an important first step for the federal government to begin living up to its promise to support individuals with disabilities," end quote. The Department of Health and Human Services has 3 years to complete the work on the Clearinghouse website. President Biden also recently signed a law requiring the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and the Government Accountability Office to report to Congress on help provided to people with disabilities in major disasters and changes to improving accessibility at Amtrak stations and at federal buildings. And just another word about the new law, the searchable database for resources. There is one in Illinois that you can check out at lifespan.org. It's a great site if you're looking for services. Moving on with the news. Temple University College of Public Health recently received a $7.5 million contract from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, or PCORI, a nonprofit research funding organization to study ways to help young adults with disabilities learn how to use public transportation. Chance to Ride is designed to foster independence among people with disabilities who are leaving mandated school services, a major barrier to employment, getting involved with the community, and socializing. Transportation is a key, according to Beth Pfeiffer, a health and rehabilitation sciences professor at Temple and the project's lead investigator. The study will test two approaches, one led by staff members and one by peer supporters who have an intellectual or developmental disability. Pfeiffer said, quote, "Our hope is that this study can help reduce these barriers and that these individuals will have more independent forms of transportation so that they can live independently and engage with their communities," end quote. Before age 21, schools, parents, and other caretakers provide transportation for children, but when young people leave school, they also lose those services and may be on their own to figure out how to get around. The program will work with individuals to address physical disabilities, communication limitations, and sensory issues that might affect their ability to travel, and training will include how to read road signs and how to handle emergencies. They'll practice traveling on public buses, rail, or subway lines initially with support and then on their own. Temple is working with the University of Florida, the University of Minnesota, and the University of New Hampshire, each university partnering with community organizations that serve adults with disabilities to provide that transportation training. And finally, starting this month, people with disabilities can save more money than ever before they were able if they have an ABLE account, which allows people to save without risking access to their Medicaid and other government benefits. Contributions to ABLE accounts starting in 2025 can total up to $19,000. That's an increase of $1,000 over last year. ABLE accounts were established under a federal law 10 years ago, offering people with disabilities the opportunity to save up to $100,000 without sacrificing their eligibility for Social Security and other government benefits. Medicaid can be kept no matter how much is in the accounts. Money saved in ABLE accounts can pay for qualified disability expenses like education, health care, transportation, and housing. Interest earned on the accounts is tax-free. People with disabilities who are employed can additionally save some of their earnings if they do not contribute to a retirement plan. Workers with disabilities can save up to $15,060 in earnings in ABLE accounts above and beyond the $19,000 cap for this year, according to Kathy Brannigan with the ABLE National Resource Center. ABLE accounts are available in 47 states, most of which are open to people with disabilities across the country, as long as their disability happened before age 26. Next year, the age increases for people who acquired their disability before age 46, opening possibilities for an estimated 6 million people to receive that advantage. And that's the news for this week. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Welcome to the show today, Mike Workman, who is a person with bipolar disorder who has been through what he describes as crisis and recoveries, and has a very interesting story about his experiences with that disability. And also joining us in the studio is a guest that we've had here before on this very topic, Zelig Bartel, who is the person who leads the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance here in Champaign. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When was it that your family discovered that you were struggling with bipolar disorder?
Well, I didn't discover that I had bipolar disorder, and it really, the symptoms didn't appear until later in life. Right around the time I was around 38 or 39, I noticed that I started feeling what I would call very depressed, and it didn't seem to go away. It just seemed to get worse. A lot of the things that I normally like to do, all of a sudden I found myself not wanting to do. The things that normally I had the motivation for to complete, I found myself lacking in motivation. I found myself kind of isolating also from friends and family. I went to the doctor, to a general practitioner, and he diagnosed it as depression. So I started taking depression medication along with some anxiety medication because with my depression, anxiety was there also. And that continued on for for probably around 3 years or so. And it felt like I was feeling a little better, but I still felt like there was something more. Around 2002, I had what is considered a psychotic episode. That was a very scary thing.
What did that look like?
Well, a psychotic episode, basically for me, I stayed conscious through it. Some people don't. Some people, sometimes you go completely unconscious, basically. But I remembered most of it, and I just became very, very angry, and your mind basically takes over and creates its own reality. You're no longer in what true reality is. Your thoughts are coming 100 miles an hour, it's just chaotic in your brain.
Where were you when this happened?
I was at my residence at my home. Luckily, at that time, no one was hurt. The police came and they got an ambulance and was taken to a hospital here in town and spent 5 days getting on the right medication. Now, at that time, a doctor diagnosed me at that time with bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
which I found later on is very common. A lot of times, people do get diagnosed with depression, and miss the doctor may miss the bipolar portion of it, because people come in to see a doctor a lot of times when they're not feeling well. When you're in the highs of the mania, you're feeling good. There's no reason to go to the doctor unless you go too high. In my case, there probably wasn't enough questions asked or something like that to really find out exactly, hey, has this guy got bipolar or is he just depressed?
Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit about the recovery process. It wasn't just medication that got you through it, was it?
Right. Now, that first incident I told you about, that was the minor of the two.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the second one was a lot worse. It was terribly worse. I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 in 2002 with depression and anxiety, and I was on a course of medication. And I was doing better and feeling better and better as time went along. And a couple of years later, I was discussing with my doctor about maybe coming off some of the medications, because I was on three or four different kinds of medications and thought, you know, hey, if I can come off anything, I'd like to, you know. We started decreasing. He said to decrease a certain medication. And we started slowly coming down off of that medication. About 6 to 7 months after I'd come off of all of that particular medication, which was a mood stabilizer, I had another psychotic episode. And unfortunately, this one was pretty violent. I took my pocket knife out and started stabbing my eyes. I also basically blacked out and stabbed my in-laws that were there at the house. Luckily, they weren't hurt seriously. But I do now have permanent damage in my right eye. So.
And did you have any consciousness of this when it was happening? Do you remember any of it?
None whatsoever. I remember at the point when I was stabbing myself in the eye, I remember that. And then it's just like a big black area coming. And all I remember seeing is it just closing down to a circle. And then everything went black. The next thing I remember was being right next to my father-in-law. And having a knife in my hand and thinking, what did I just do? And I seen blood, and I knew what I must have done. But then, you know, I, at that time, and even for another 3 or 4 days later, after I'd been in the hospital, I hadn't even learned that I had stabbed my mother-in-law. I didn't even know that at all. So, I was completely not myself.
How long did that episode last before you actually were able to learn the results of this episode?
Well, I was the actual coming to, I would say, from blacking out to then again seeing things, I'm guessing probably didn't take more than a couple of minutes at the most. But I don't know for sure. My in-laws would probably know for sure on that, or closer to that. I know that that whole weekend, this happened on a weekend, I was kind of in and out of being psychotic. Mm-hmm. So that weekend really is a blur for me. There's only certain bits and pieces I remember.
How long ago was that?
That's been about 3 years ago.
And since then, have you had any other episodes, or do you feel like you're pretty well under control medically at this point?
Yes, I am very, very under control. The medications, they basically, when I got back in the hospital, they immediately got me back on mood stabilizers and things. And since I've been back on the right medication, I haven't had any problems whatsoever. I haven't had any kind of mania or, you know, really, you've got the mania, and then mania, if it goes extreme, will step into the psychotic, and I haven't even gotten into the mania part, so my medication is working very well.
Do you recognize that on your own, or is that something that you have to rely on friends and family for?
I recognize that on my own pretty much now, but I also, my wife is very good about watching for any signs with me. She's educated herself, and she is, she's very good about, you know, Mike, are you feeling well, or this or that? She would be a good spotter if things started going,
bipolar disorder, because mm-hmm. I think one thing that a lot of folks don't understand is somebody can go through a significant event like you did and still live a productive life in the
right.
community. So talk about what you do, what you're interested in, and what your life is like day to day.
Okay. I have a great family, first of all. My family rallied behind me big time through this whole incident. Not only that, but friends, close friends, and the people at work that I work with. Very, very, very good support. A lot of prayers went up for me up through this, and I do deeply appreciate everybody for that, and that makes a big difference. So many people that I've talked to now with my volunteer work with the DBSA group don't have the family support, and without family support, it's a lot harder to get through illnesses. Since I've gotten through, and really I feel like I'm doing very, very well, and have some, you know, some insight to certain things, I've been trying to give back by way of the DBSA group. I do part-time facilitate the group, and I feel like I can bring something to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, when new people come, Zelik or myself, I just go into my story. And people hear my story, I think it kind of helps them think, wow, if this guy can, you know, go through what he just went through and turn around and have a normal, good life, then, you know, maybe I can too.
Okay. Is there something that you would like people out there in the community that don't have any experience with bipolar disorder to understand about it and about you and people who are, you know,
right.
are in the same boat that you are?
Well, first of all, I'd like people to know that this is an illness that is caused by chemical imbalances in the brain. It's something that you don't have control over. Just like you know, to a certain extent, if I developed diabetes down the road, you know, I may have not have had any kind of way of preventing that. It's the same way with mental illness. It's just something that, you know, it may be in your DNA that you're going to get it. It's really no different than a medical condition. The only thing of it is we haven't had as much studies on mental illnesses as we have on, you know, regular physical ailments. So I think a lot of times people are a little bit hesitant, a little bit afraid of people that do have mental illness. But remember this too, it's very, very real. It's when you're in a depressive state, you are feeling, everything feels very, very real. You feel completely tired. You feel pains that may not really be pains, but you feel them as they are truly pains.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to the point that you feel like that the only relief you're going to get is possibly death. And that's when it gets scary. If somebody gets to that point, that's when they've got to know, hey, I've got to tell a friend. I have got to go to the hospital. I've got to call a helpline. I've got to talk to somebody about this because this isn't right, you know. And that's what I feel that the illness, when the illness is fully matured and got the person down as much as it wants, that could be the outcome, is death. And that's where you see a lot of the suicides and stuff like that, is people have just gotten so down that they just don't feel like there's any way that they could ever get better. And I'm here to tell them, all of them out there, every single one of them, there is a way to get better. Everyone can get better. You just need to ask for help.
I just want to indicate that bipolar disorder especially is a very deadly illness if untreated. In a lifetime, 15% of all people with bipolar disorder will commit suicide.
So where do they go for help, Zalig?
First thing is to go to a qualified mental health professional, a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Now, the difference is that a psychiatrist is a medical doctor. And major mental illnesses are illnesses of the body, so it requires medication and careful evaluation. I would go to your general practitioner and ask for a referral to a psychiatrist, or go to the local mental health center for an evaluation where their clinicians can make an evaluation and then make a referral. The local mental health center in Champaign-Urbana has doctors. There are also doctors in the community, several in Champaign-Urbana who can help.
And the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance would also be a good resource.
Absolutely.
I hope that by you taking the time to speak to our listeners today, that they have a better understanding of bipolar disorder and that there is hope for people as long as they get connected and get treated.
Yes, there is.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us today, Mike. It was great having you here, and Zelig, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this pre-recorded interview today, and I just want to mention that since this was recorded about 10 years ago, Zelig Bartel has passed away, and he was the longtime president of the Bipolar and Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. I looked on their website today, and they still have a website. Their president is Amanda Bryan, and if you want to reach out to her, you can do so. I did so today, and I haven't heard back. I just wanted to talk with her or somebody from the Bipolar Support Alliance to see if they were still functional as a group. Their email address is dbsaurbana, that's all one word, dbsaurbana@gmail.com, or you can call at 810-328-3272. Now, they did If I get any more information, I will certainly post that on the Disability Beat Facebook page. I do know that the mental health center is no longer in place. They are now called Rosecrans. So if you are struggling with mental health issues, you may want to call Rosecrans and get started with whatever kind of supports might be helpful to you. This time of year is critically difficult for people with mental health issues. Going through the holidays can be really difficult anyway for a typical person. But as you are, you know, going through difficult times, you know, maybe feeling disconnected through COVID, maybe feeling disconnected through the winter and the cold weather that we're going through right now, it is very easy to get depressed, and you don't want your family and friends or yourself to fall into a pattern of, you know, looking at suicide as a possible option. It's not. So, check out the options that you have. Join with other people. If there is still a Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance or a similar group, I will share that information on the Disability Beat Facebook page. But I'm encouraging people to connect with one another. If there isn't a group, there ought to be. And maybe some folks who are listening today should think about getting together and starting that group. So stay tuned. I don't have nearly enough time to go over all the details of things that we had to take out of that interview. And there are other ones that I have done over the years that I intend to bring back over time. It's important to hear those stories, and I thank you for spending the time to listen to them. And thanks for tuning in today. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.
Support for WEFT programming is made possible in part by Bash Pepper Roofing. Large or small, they cover them all, commercial or residential. Bash Pepper Roofing offers roofing and re-roofing, gutters, siding, and door needs. For more information, 217-352-2200 or online at bashpepper.com.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois, and streaming online at weft.org. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio, so stay tuned for that and other great programming here on WEFT. You'll be hearing live music tonight at 10 o'clock with WEFT Sessions, so stay tuned for that. There's lots of great stuff to check out. And without further ado, here is today's episode of Food Sleuth Radio.
Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hemmelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today I'm honored to welcome my guest, Representative Bill Pluker. He has been a member of the Maine House of Representatives since 2018, where he serves as House Chair on the Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Committee. Representative Pluker is also a farmer. He currently runs Begin Again Farm, a small vegetable operation selling primarily wholesale to local grocers and the Mainers Feeding Mainers program, which brings fresh produce to people in need. He is also the public policy organizer for the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, affectionately known as MOFGA, where he works to engage and energize the MOFGA community to take action.